And Pat's putting on Christ in baptism just added to that excitement for me. I'm about as excited this morning as when Indiana won their last football game. And that's been some time ago, I think. I really appreciate the other classes joining us and coming together in here this morning because some time ago now, Ron Major shared with me a dream that he had, and that is that some college-level Bible courses would be offered here at Waterford from the Sunset International Bible Institute. And I shared with him at that time that I had the same dream years and years ago down at the Taylor Center Church, and we never followed through with it because we were involved in so many other things. And I said, share that dream with the elders. And Ron did speak with our elders here, shared the dream with them, and that dream is becoming a reality. After much prayer and after much discussion, September 6th, we will have a satellite of the Sunset International Bible Institute here at the Waterford facility. And we're excited about that dream coming true and those prayers being answered. The trouble of it is when you start something new like this in a congregation, most people don't have a clue what in the world you're even talking about. And we're talking about Bible. Closer. All right, we'll eat this thing. Pretend like it, okay. Anyway, we're really excited about this dream and these prayer, the dream coming true and these prayers being answered about the school being here. And we want to explain a little bit more detail to all of you so that you can all go around being real smart about what's going on. The Great Lakes School of Biblical Studies is a branch, an extension, a satellite of the Sunset International Bible Institute. We will be having some college-level Bible courses here beginning Tuesday, September the 6th. And if you've never taken a college-level Bible course, I would urge you to do so, or at least audit one if you've not done it, because I remember my first Bible-level Bible course at Michigan Christian College. When I went there, I thought Bible classes were going to be glorified Sunday school. You show up and you get a gold star. My first course was early Hebrew histories, and I was in for a rude awakening. It was not. You just show up and you get a gold star. And so they are very difficult courses. They're not easy, but anyone can do them. It's just that you got to kind of notch it up to a serious level when you're taking a Bible class on a college level. You can take these courses, by the way. You can just simply audit them. And what that means is you show up, you enjoy them, you benefit, you grow by them. But you're not taking the exams and you're not doing the papers and you're not doing the outside reading unless you want to. That's auditing a class. There's not a charge there except for buying the course guide, the book that goes along with the course. This is just an example of one course we're going to have here in just a few moments by Richard Rogers. You can also take it for a certificate of biblical studies, or if you're ambitious, and we hope that you are, you'll take it for a bachelor's degree in biblical studies. And now, I kind of added to Ron's dream when he was sharing with me about having the school, and that is, my dream is that there would be some men who would say, you know, I have a job that I enjoy, but I would like to equip myself to where I could be a tent-making preacher, where I could work my job that I enjoy, but on weekends, I can find a small congregation that needs a minister, and I'll go preach for them, even though they can't afford very much. And Michigan is loaded with small congregations. And they're suffering from a couple perspectives. One, they don't have good preaching. And number two, the bigger churches that used to help support them financially, some of them are non-existent or half what the size they used to be. Waterford has been very blessed by God. And we have been growing when a lot of other churches have not been growing, but they've been shrinking. We would also like to find some men who say, you know what, one of these days I'm going to retire. and I would really like to do something useful in God's kingdom, and I'd like to prepare myself to preach when I'm retired at a congregation that just can't pay that much. And so one of my goals is that we find those kind of men and have them here at the Great Lakes School of Biblical Studies preparing themselves to either be a tent-making part-time preacher or a part-time preacher when they're retired. And I would like to see that. I know our elders have shared with me that part of their dream is that we would grow up leadership and that the church would continue to grow and be blessed by God because we prepare for more growth than what we've had so far. If the church doubled, would we need more elders? Yes. Would we need more deacons? Yes. Would we need more Bible teachers? Yes. Would we need more people who are confident in their level of Bible knowledge? Yes. To all those things. So this morning, if you will, what I'd like to do, because I like to gab and I don't want to do that, because I want you to get a sample of what a college level one, pretend that it's a Tuesday night down the road, pretend that the course level that's being offered is the one by Richard Rogers, who's giving us one on leadership, the excellence of leadership, and we just want to give you a sample of one of the ways in which the courses are delivered to us here at Waterford. We get them. They come from DVDs, from actual lectures that go on in the school down there. And so you're going to get to hear the professor. And, well, let's just do that now, David.
Welcome to our continuing study of Christian excellence. We're going to begin a study of Christian excellence in leadership, or leadership with Christian excellence. If you've not already viewed and studied the first of this series that deals with the definition of Christian excellence and a contrast between Christian excellence and human success, humanism, you might want to view that and study that before this lesson. But we're going to be capitalizing on a lot of the things we said there, where we contrasted God's simplicity with man's duplicity. So we contrasted God's service style of leadership to man's being served style of life. In this lesson, we're going to center in this introductory lesson, on what leadership is not, as well as what it is. As a beginning text, and this is what we're going to be doing, is studying Bible text. Turn with me to Luke chapter 22, and we'll begin reading in verse 24. This is the last week of Jesus' life. He's on his way to the cross. And I read in verse 24, "Also a dispute arose among them as to which of them was considered to be the greatest. Jesus said to them, 'The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called, or call themselves, benefactors. But you're not to be like that. Instead, the greatest among you should be like the youngest, and the one who rules like the one who serves. For who is greater, the one who's at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. You are those who've stood by me in my trials.'" Jesus says three things there in a negative way about leadership. First of all, he says that the Gentiles have to have the kind of authority they have. They have to have those that rule over them. They have to have those who exercise authority over them. And they even call those that do so benefactors. Benefactor comes from two Latin words, bene, which means good, and factor, which we've translated into English, which means an element that controls. And so these were good. These were viewed as good leaders, as good rulers by those who ruled over them. As a matter of fact, one of them in the Roman times, Octavian by name, was even renamed by the people Augustus, which means the august one, the good one, the one that we really like. But Jesus says, you are not to be like that. You're not even to be good rulers. We are not to be, or we are to see, that leadership is not then, number one, political power play. It's not the striving for office. There in verse 24, where we read, "A dispute arose among them," that word translates an original word that literally means rivalry and is used for the campaigning to office, like one running for the office. And there are some people that run for the office of leader. they run for elder, or they run for preacher, or they run for some other office that they consider to be a great political plum, a thing to possess. This is not the first time that Jesus has spoken to his disciples about this. In Mark chapter 10, a parallel in Matthew chapter 20, Jesus has been confronted by James and John and their mother, wanting them to be on the right hand and on the left hand in his kingdom. Their view of leadership was position and power and prestige. But Jesus said that's not what leadership is. Leadership is serving, and he uses a word that means to serve tables. Leadership is becoming a slave, and he means one who is the purchased possession of another, who exists simply to benefit that one. And then he says, if you really want to be a leader, then you need to sacrifice your life for others, as I've sacrificed my life for you. It's sickening today as we look at the campaigning for political office, as we see, spiritual offices, as if they were political offices. And if a pulpit, if a place to preach opens up in a prestigious place, there's a long line of people to go there. But when we hear of nations, whole nations, who've not heard the gospel of Christ, there are very few volunteers to go there. I'm persuaded today, sadly so, that many people's idea of leadership is a political position, and therefore they engage in political power play. But in the second place, Jesus says here that Christian excellent leadership is not authoritarian attitude. And here's where he makes the contrast, as we've already made, between the Gentile ruler and the spiritual ruler. The Gentile ruler exercises authority. The Gentile ruler lords it over the person. He exercises dominion over another person's attitude, another person's activity, another person's character. And even if it's good, even if it's for the benefit of that person, to the point that they say, I like it this way. This man is a good ruler. He is a benefactor. He's the very kind of ruler I want. Jesus said, in the spiritual kingdom, you're still not to be like that. And he draws then the contrast to the spiritual ruler, who rather than being a good ruler, is simply a servant among other servants. He is a slave serving other slaves. When elders in the church or other leaders consider their prime directive to be to order and control the activities of other people, the functions of shepherding and the functions of helping, and yes, even the function of leading, goes begging. What a pity that is, when if they would simply be the shepherds of God's flock and not try to be those in authority. Then in verse 27, if you read it carefully, there's a statement that says leadership is not cultic control. Let's read verse 27 together again. He says, for who is greater, the one who sits at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who sits at the table? Now, if you've seen any films about cultic leaders, like the one in Guyana, then you know that their position was always high, always above everyone else. They're always speaking down to the people and calling them their children or their disciples. That's what Jesus pictures here. He pictures a table at which the chief ones, the great ones, the leaders have seated themselves to eat. And he then pictures people scurrying around, picking up plates, putting on cups, pouring water in the glass, pouring coffee in the cup, putting food on the table, making sure that everyone is cared for. He said, if you entered such a room and saw these noble men sitting at the table, and saw these others scurrying around to meet and to serve their every need, which one would you consider to be greater? Jesus says, without question, the greater one seen with the physical eyes would be the one sitting at the table. But Jesus says, I am among you like one who serves. What's the location of the spiritual leader? Among the people that need serving. What is the function of the spiritual leader? Serving their need, meeting their need. Spiritual leadership is not so much commandment and direction as it is simply meeting the need of the people. When all that we're going to do spiritually has to be carried to and run by a man or a group of men for their approval before we can do it, then we're caught it, whether we want to admit it or not. Jesus is the shepherd. He is the Lord. He is the one who has spoken, and all of these men are simply those who see that his need is carried out. What we want to consider next is a contrast between natural and spiritual leadership. Natural leadership is that, of course, which man really desires. And I think we need to think about what natural leadership's qualities are as it's contrasted to spiritual leadership. You'll see on your screen a chart in just a moment that illustrates this. On one side of the screen is the natural leader. On the other side of the screen will be the spiritual leader and the qualities that it takes to be a good natural leader and the qualities it takes to be a good spiritual leader. To be a good natural leader, one must be self-confident. Nobody follows a timid person in the world. He has to be loud. He has to be sure. He has to be confident. It doesn't even hurt very much if he's a little bit cocky. If they know he knows where he's going and he's confident that he's going to get there, people will follow him. The spiritual leader, in contrast to that self-confident natural leader, his total confidence is in God. He admits readily that he doesn't know the way. He admits nearly automatically that he is definitely not the way, and that the strength to get them at the desired destination is not in him, but he's confident in God. He knows him whom he has believed, and he's well persuaded that he's able to keep that which has been committed unto him against that day. The natural leader has to know man. He has to be a student of the way that man thinks and the needs of man, and even more important than that, for natural leadership, the greeds of man. What is man really lust for? If you can find that out and show them a way to get there, then they'll follow you. The spiritual leader, on the other hand, knowing man for what he is, knows God also. And he can speak of knowing God, of knowing Christ, of knowing the Spirit, of being intimate with the one that knows the way to the eternal abode. The natural leader has to be a very ambitious man. Natural leadership is built around the ambition to receive, to achieve the goal that I have in my mind. And they talk about themselves, and they talk about their goal, and they talk about how we're going to mutually achieve this nirvana that is upon earth. The spiritual man, the spiritual leader, the shepherd, on the other hand, is self-effacing. He doesn't talk negative about himself. He just doesn't talk about himself. He talks about Christ, and he points people to Jesus so that they can find the true guide for their life. The natural leader has to have the ability to make and to enforce his own decisions, what he plans, what he wills to occur. The spiritual leader, on the other hand, seeks to know God's will and to get people to see the will of God. The natural leader originates his own methods to reach that desired end. The spiritual leader finds, or seeks to find, and follow the way of God. The natural leader enjoys commanding people and does so well. And people follow him because his commands seem to make sense to them. The spiritual leader delights to obey God, and he delights to get people to submit to and obey God. The natural leader is motivated by his own self-felt needs. His needs have to be met, and in doing so, he thinks he's meeting the needs of the rest of mankind. The spiritual leader, on the other hand, is motivated by a love for God and a love for others, and he intends to lead them toward the achievement of God's goal for them. On the bottom line, the natural leader runs an institution. The spiritual leader helps and serves in the body of Christ. Well, that's what leadership is not. And a contrast, at least a beginning contrast, that we'll carry throughout our study to what spiritual leadership is. But I want you to turn in your Bibles over to 1 Thessalonians, and let's look at chapter 2, beginning with about verse 7. I think we'll read beginning with verse 1, but when we get back to studying it, we'll start in verse 7. And let's see a biblical definition as well as an example of what leadership is. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, beginning with verse 1. You know, brothers, that our visit to you was not a failure. We had previously suffered and been insulted in Philippi, as you yourselves know. But with the help of our God, we dared to tell you His gospel in the spite of strong opposition. For the appeal we make does not spring from error or impure motives, nor are we trying to trick you. On the contrary, we speak as men approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel. We're not trying to please men, but God who tests our hearts. You know we never use flattery, nor did we put on a mask to cover up greed. God is our witness. We are not looking for praise from men, from you, or from anyone else. As apostles of Christ, we could have been a burden to you, but we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her little children. We loved you so much that we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well, because you had become dear to us. Surely you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We worked night and day in order not to be a burden to anyone while we preached the gospel to you. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how holy and righteous and blameless we were among you who believe. For you know, that we dealt with each of you, as a father deals with his own children, encouraging, comforting, and urging you to live lives worthy of God who called you into his kingdom and glory. Now that was a rather long reading. But in the first part of it, in the first six verses, he states, I was not like a human leader. I wasn't after anything of yours. I had no greed to fulfill. I had no need that drove me. What did drive him? And what is leadership? He says it's three things. He says, first of all, leadership is a mother's nurture. Secondly, he says it's a brother's example. And thirdly, he says it's a father's love. Leadership is a family thing. And the leader looks upon himself as a mother and a brother and a father of those that he leads. Let's go back through those verses and see the ingredients of a mother's nurture, the ingredients of a brother's example, the ingredients of a father's love. Paul says in verse 7, we were gentle. Could have been a burden, he said in verse 6. We could have demanded our way because we're apostles. We had a right to do that. He says, but we were gentle among you, like a mother caring for her little child. He said there's three ingredients. Not only that, he says, we were willing to, anxious to share with you, not just the gospel, but our whole lives as well. Isn't that just like a mother, three ingredients? He said, I was gentle, I cared, and I shared. If there's any word that comes to my mind when I think of a true mother, it is that word gentle. As they take that little baby who's not able to sustain itself into her bosom, as she holds that baby close and manifests to that baby the love that is to be there. At the end of World War II, there were many orphans dying in hospitals in Europe, and they tried to figure out why. Finally, the UN sent a team of pediatricians over there and examined it. And the chief man wrote a prescription as they left. And that prescription said very simply, you pick those babies up three times a day and you hold them close to you. Not when you're feeding them, but just other times. And you hold them close for 5 minutes and put them down. The baby stopped dying. Because they were receiving what mothers gave, the gentleness of their bosom. And mothers care for the children. When I was a youngster, not even a year old, I got scarlet fever. And I was told that my mother stayed awake all night, all day, for 3 days, and kept me from moving in order that that scarlet fever would not develop into rheumatic fever and I forever have a weak heart. Why'd she do that? Because she's paid to do it, she's paid absolutely nothing to do it. because that was her duty to do it? It was her duty to do it. But that's not why she did it. She did it because she was a mother and she cared for me. And that's the way leaders are to care for those in their help, in their hands, and in their control. And mothers share. I've never seen a mother with a child beside it eat all that was on the mother's plate. Always sharing. The baby has a plate too, but the mother's taking food up off of her plate and sharing it with the child. Again, we might suppose she had the duty to do that, but that's not why she's doing it. She's doing it because that's her baby. She's doing it because that's the thing she brought in the world and for which she is responsible to see that it grows as it should. And so she shares everything she has for that child. When we have leaders like that, we'll begin to have spiritual leaders. But then in verses 9 and 10, Paul changes his figure from being their mother to being their brother. And he says, surely you remember, brothers, our toil and hardship. We work night and day on behalf of you, not to be a burden for anyone. There's the brother's example. He toils. He endures hardship. He labors constantly. And the reason for that is, that's my brother. I'm sure that you've received in your mail or you've seen pictures of the little lad who's got his brother up on his shoulders and they're moving toward a place of mutual security and mutual help. And the question is asked. It's not asked, but it's inferred in the answer. The question has had to be asked, isn't that boy heavy? Because the man replies, the little boy replies, no, he's not heavy. He's my brother. And that's literally the way it is. Brothers will endure all kind of hardship. They'll carry all kinds of burdens for each other. And if my brother, who's 8.5 years younger than I am, were to call me today and say, Richard, I need you here as quickly as possible. If there's a plane that would get me to Hearst quicker than a car, I'd take the plane. If not, I'd be in the car. The quickest, the surest, the best way to his side is where I would be when a brother's in need. That's the spiritual leader. The leader who looks upon his brother's need as his own need. Who looks upon the brother's trouble as his own trouble. Who will toil for him, who will work hard for him, who will stay up all night, all day and all night to try to meet that brother's anxious and terrible need. That's spiritual leadership. Not the demanding that a brother serve him, but the demand that a brother be served. Then in verse 11 and 12, he changes from the mother through the son, or the brother, excuse me, and now to the father. And he says in verse 11, for you know that we dealt with each of you. I'm glad he didn't say all of you, because then it might have been a commune, a collective thing. Paul says, you know that I dealt with each one of you. That's one-on-one, one father, one son. He said, I dealt with each of you as a father deals with his own son. And how's that? How does a father deal with a son? He said, encouraging you, comforting you, and urging you to live a life worthy of the gospel of Christ. There's how fathers labor for sons. And there's how spiritual leaders labor for those that they lead. They encourage them. That's an interesting word, isn't it? Do you like words? Words are the ways we communicate with each other, aren't they? And what does this word say? This word says that I am to encourage those that God gives me to lead. In, that means exactly in English what it means when it's E-N or I-N. It means inside of. Courage is the strength to endure the challenge and the dare. And so he says very simply that I am to put within those that I lead the courage, the strength of character to go on. That's what leaders do. Leaders provide for those that they lead the ability to endure. But then he says, I not only encourage, I comfort this one. Again, interesting word. The word com means with or together. And the word fort comes from the Latin word fortis, which means to strengthen or to arm. I am to give strength with. I am to give armor to. I am to give protection to and with that brother. I'm not to send him a letter of encouragement. I am to be to him a letter of encouragement. I'm to stand with him. I'm to stand by his side. And as a weaker brother, I need so often the stronger brother to come and simply stand beside me. And in his presence, I receive the strength to go on. He provides for me with his presence what multitudes of letters could not perform. But I'm not only to, as a leader, to be an encourager and to be a comforter, but he says, urging him to live a life worthy of the gospel of Christ. That word urge literally means to provoke. It has the idea of a pin or a prod that pushes one into a certain activity. I need that on many, many occasions. I need somebody to come and tell me, you can do better than this. You have the ability. You have the strength from God to be able to stand up and be firm. You are able to fulfill this. Now, the ability is not mine. Paul said in Ephesians 3, verse 20 and 21, now unto him who's able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works in us. I am told by my leaders that there's working within me the power of God, the power that created the world, the power that raised Jesus from the dead. That power is working in me. Therefore, I can do whatever God gives me to do. All things are possible through him that loved me. Paul said in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13, if Jesus goes with me, I'll go anywhere. And how does Jesus go with me? He goes with me not only by his word and by the spirit that dwells in me, but he goes with me when one of his shepherds comes and stands by my side and leads me beside still waters and restores my soul and fills my cup and makes all of my life meaningful because I am the sheep of God led by this shepherd of God. Won't it be great when all of God's leaders are doing this? When all of God's leaders are giving sick and crying babies in Christ a mother's nurture. When brothers are going to younger brothers who are faltering and need help, and they're working with them, toiling and laboring and constantly laboring and being with them. And that when the older brothers and sisters in Christ come, and they give a father's comfort. And they encourage. They put courage inside of me. I'm so fearful. And they comfort me, put strength in me, who feel very, very weak, but then challenge me, urge me and provoke me to live up to what God has already put in me. I'm not mature. I'm not what I ought to be. I'm not what I should be. I'm not even what I want to be. But by God's grace, I'm not what I used to be. And the reason for that is I've had mothers to nurture me, brothers to give me an example, and fathers to urge me and say, I'm going this way, you come go with me. And with a firm hand around in my on my hand, or with a firm arm on my shoulder, they lead me through the valley of the shadow of death into the glory of the kingdom of God. And surely then, goodness and mercy shall follow us all the days of our life. We'll live in the house of the Lord forever. And it won't be because we've been some great success in life. It'll be because some leader has led us unto realms eternal. God help each of us to be good leaders and to be good followers as we continue our study of leadership in Christian excellence.
Good stuff? Ah, absolutely it is. By the way, the Great Lakes School of Biblical Studies will have about 40 courses. And this is just a first lesson of one course on leadership. And so you can understand that how excited I am about this, because I can visualize many of you participating in this level of Bible study. I really can. Inside your bulletin, I got to make mention of this before I forget it. You'll see a little form that says, you know, that you have some interest in auditing or taking for credit. And we would just like to have the information that, yes, you're interested in taking a deeper level, you know, college level Bible course. And again, the auditing, there's no charge except for when you buy the class guide. And there is a charge for that. If you take it for credit, the information is right there. I have an idea that many of you have some friends that go to other churches. And that a lot of you have friends who don't know God well enough to even be motivated to come and worship Him. I think it would be a tremendous tool if you said, well, I'm going to audit a college level course and I'd like for you to come and go with me. And bring one of those friends that you have from another church, or bring one of your friends that their faith is just not strong enough to even get them inside the building yet, and say, come and take a course with me. And urge them to come and be part of it with you. If you'll fill out that thing in the bulletin and give it to Ron Major or I or Dawn or one of the elders, we'd like to have that information so we can contact you about ordering the guide, so they'll be there on the first day of our courses. September 6th is going to be here right away, okay? And again, I don't want you to make the false assumption like I do that college-level Bible courses are like glorified Sunday school. If I show up, I get a gold star. They're not. Let me give you an example. If you were taking this particular course for college credit, there's two other textbooks you have to buy. There's two other papers you have to write. There's two exams you have to take. And there's 31 Bible verses you have to memorize before you complete the course. This is not Sunday school. I'm really trying to underline the fact that this is not Bible school, okay? You know, you come and hear me or David or go to the ladies' class and you get up and you walk out and say, I had a wonderful time. Well, we hope you did. But the point of it is, the Great Lakes School of Biblical Studies is not that. It's a lot more than that. And we would love for you to come and audit one of the courses or take one of the courses for credit and bring somebody with you. We are getting late in promoting it, and so we need your help in telling other churches of Christ. We've notified all of them. I'm going out and speaking at a couple of them this month to share with them what we're doing and urge them to be praying for the success of it. We just love, well, the idea that this thing is starting up at Waterford and you guys are part of it. You're making it happen by offering your facilities and offering my time, and we just are thankful for that. And we'll notify you about, you know, ordering the study guide that goes with the first two courses. If you've noticed already, I hope you have, that the first two courses we're offering is Biblical Interpretation and the Historical Christian Evidences, or Apologetics 1 course that will be starting up on September the 6th. When you fill out that little insert inside your bulletin, would you do me one more favor? Some have indicated they'd like to have a daytime class and not an evening class. If there's enough interest, we'll be offering a Tuesday afternoon study of these same two courses. But I'm not going to do it for one or two people. There's got to be enough interest that would merit us having those courses in the afternoon. But if you'd like to do a daytime study instead of an evening study, if you'll let Ron or I know by filling out that little insert, we would much, much appreciate it. Any questions regarding the school that I can answer briefly, real quick? I want you guys to be so smart that if anybody bumped into you after class, you could answer them. Yes. Yeah, right now, just because of the short notice, this is all we could put together. But yeah, we'll have it laid out. Yeah, we'll be getting that together. It was just really getting this together real quick to get it out so we can inform the people. Good question. Thank you. Yes. What is the cost? Did you guys get a letter this week? Okay, let me reinforce it that if you audit the class or if you just attend it, there is no charge except for the study guide. The reason for the different prices of the study guide, some of the courses are like one quarter and some of them are two quarters long. Okay, so instead of like, you know, 13 weeks, some of them are 26 weeks long. And so that's the reason why, for the different amounts regarding the study guides, the $15 or the $20. If you take it for a certificate, there's a $25 application fee. It's $45 per course, and then your study guide. And then, you know, the books for the course are optional if you take it for a certificate. If you're taking it for a degree, then there is that $25 application fee, $90 per course, your study guide cost plus up to $75 for one of the courses, just for the textbooks that are required for it. So that was real quick, but I tried to answer that question. Yes?
Speaking of the class, can you do it fully,
even though you're not going after a certificate or a degree? Yeah. Repeat the question. Can you audit it and still do the extra work and stuff too? Yes.
You just don't get a grade.
Yeah, you don't get a grade for an audit. Yeah, you're right. Good question. Yes, Don. Ah, thank you. Don said, you know, to remind me, there's an associate degree for 20 courses and a bachelor's for 40. So some people go just for the associate degree and not the bachelor's, but both are available.
Are we making money at this?
No. The fees primarily are going to Lubbock for their expenses. They make the class guides. They make the DVDs. Basically, by the way, the time we're talking right now, we would have a discussion of what was just discussed in a course. We'll be discussing the class, because you can imagine right now if I passed out a test and say, how much of that did you remember? So there is some discussion after the class, and we try to answer questions, and we try to reinforce some of the main points, because we're trying to help people succeed and pass the course. We're not trying to make a person go away saying, oh, I feel so dumb and stupid. No, that's not the goal. The goal is to benefit you. Yes, Ron?
All the tests and all the papers graded by
SUSE. Yes, all papers and all exams are graded down in Lubbock, Texas. We're the administrators. But they take care of the grading, and you pass or flunk based upon them, not us. Yes? Who's going to be the teachers? First of all, we're getting all their teachers through the DVDs. But then we have, is it five here at Waterford that are certified administrators? And so one of us will always be in there administrating the course. Wow, we did such a good job. Everybody is super smart about this. I like that. Okay, all three elders, Ron Majors, David, and myself. Oh, yeah, Bill. Yeah, and one man from Auburn Hills. We're all certified, the administrators. Yes. Give it to Ron Major or myself after we dismiss. And normally I wish you all to have a nice afternoon at the door, so if you miss Ron or the elders, give it to me. Yeah. By the way, just for the fun of it, how many of you are interested in a college level Bible course? Okay, a bunch. Shame on the rest of you, but we love you anyway. No. You get smarter your way, okay? I know I've taken up a lot of time. I appreciate the classes coming together. I know this is not what you were planning on when you came this morning, but thank you for your patience. And again, hopefully urge all of those that you know to be part of it.